All right, turn to 2 Kings 8. 2 Kings 8. Zach is going to read our main verses, which is 2 Kings 8, 1 through 3, then skip down 7 through 13. Get some more scriptures. Nathan, Matthew 13, 47. Caleb, 2 Kings 8, 11 and 12. Eli, 2 Kings 8, 13. And that's all for now. I started quite some time ago a series. We've been moving through the life of Elisha, and all we're looking at is leadership lessons. We're not concerned with standard lessons, as we've been looking at with miracles, how to get a miracle, different things. Just simply, Elisha was in connection with people, and we learn a lot about being a leader on any level of life. And so, coming to the end of this, probably have three more lessons in that. When in airplanes have various fuel tanks, left and right. Some have what they call inboard and outboard, meaning the closer to the wing or closer to the body out. And so what's important is toggle switches. So if you're going to fly, you have to have switches that enable you to switch between, whether that's inboard, outboard, left, right, whatever you do. If you don't have the ability to toggle between tanks, you're not going to go very far. And in some cases, this is a cause of forced landings or crashes. This is true in any level of ministry. We're going to read here in a story, actually two different stories, that Elisha has the ability to toggle between different modes of ministry, or literally how you're relating to people. So I'm going to minister about toggling in ministry. 2 Kings 8, 1 through 3, then 7 through 13.
Then Elisha spoke to the woman whose son he had restored to life, saying, "Arise and go, you and your household, and stay wherever you can. The Lord has called for a famine, and furthermore, it will come upon the land for 7 years. So the woman arose and did according to the saying of the man of God, and she went with her household and dwelt in the land of the Philistines 7 years. It came to pass at the end of the 7 years that the woman returned from the land of the Philistines, and she went to make an appeal to the king for her house and for her land. Then Elisha went to Damascus, and Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, was sick. And it was told of him, saying, "The man of God has come here." And the king said to Hazael, "Take a present in your hand, and go to meet the man of God, and inquire of the Lord by him, saying, 'Shall I recover from this disease?' So Hazael went to meet him, and took a present with him, of every good thing of Damascus, 40 camel loads, and he came and stood before him and said, 'Your son Ben-Hadad, king of Syria, has sent me to you, saying, "Shall I recover from this disease?" And Elisha said to him, go say to him, "You shall certainly recover. However, the Lord has shown me that he will really die." Then he set his countenance in a stare until he was ashamed. And the man of God wept. And Hazael said, "Why is my Lord weeping?" And he said, "Because I know that evil that you will do to the children of Israel. Their strongholds you will set on fire, and their young men you will kill with the sword, and you will dash their children and rip open their women with child."
Okay, toggling in ministry. Let's look, first of all, just lay a foundation. Let's talk about this idea of toggling. So, this scripture shows us a variety of people that Elisha encountered in ministry. In one chapter here, he moves between a nice old widow and a scheming, vicious murderer in one chapter. So all this does is this shows us that people come in great varieties. Matthew 13, 47.
Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet that was cast into the sea and gathered some of every kind.
Okay, gathered some of every kind. Later on it says good and bad. And that's true. As you minister in any collection of people, you will have people that are there who have revelation, don't have revelation. People are there with good motives, people have bad motives. People that have good character, people that have no character at all. And so this is just a part of ministry. You have to have the ability to minister to different kinds of people in different ways. So the story begins. He's talking to, he's ministering to a kind old lady, offering practical help, just making sure that she's able to eat. And that's very practical. And this lady is a very, very nice woman. Immediately after that, the very next ministry involvement is confronting Haziel and knowing clearly what this man was going to do, and he is confronting him with the truth. So he doesn't treat the old lady like he treats Haziel and vice versa. So the point is, this is what, you all understand what the toggle switch is, right? Anybody here unfamiliar with a toggle switch? Generally, they are metal. You move it left and right, up and down, depending on what it is. So what he's doing here, lady comes up, he toggles into kindness mode. Deals with her, okay, done talking to her, and now he toggles into confrontation mode. And so that is, that's one of a leadership skill on any level. You have to do that. That might be with your own children, that you have to, one child is being angelic at that moment, another one is being Satan, and you have to move between them, and then they tag team and they swap, and then they both become Satan. And so you just, you got to move beyond them or toggle back and forth. And so the problem is, some people can't do that. They get good at only one mode, or even if they're not good at it, that's their only approach. They are either all confrontation, and of course there's many other varieties, but they're either all confrontation or they're all kindness. And if you only have one mode, that's going to severely limit your ability, because people don't come in one mode. They come in varieties. So you have to be able to switch back and forth. And not only do you have to be able to switch, you have to do that without it affecting the other. In this case, it's kindness to confrontation. It may have been the other way around. And if he had to confront first, he can't then be in confrontation mode with her. What? They can't affect each other. And that's the ability you have to have. That's called toggling. Okay, let's look at these two modes here. Confronting Haziel. So, leadership means you have to deal with Haziel's situations. And so this involves seeing people, and first of all, knowing the worst of human nature. As part of leadership, you have to have the ability to know what people are capable of. 2 Kings 8, 11 and 12.
Then he set his countenance in a stare until he was ashamed, and the man of God wept. And Haziel said, "Why is my Lord weeping?" He answered, "Because I know the evil that you will do to the children of Israel. Their strongholds you will set on fire, and their young men you will kill with a sword. And you will dash their children and rip open their women with child."
Okay, so this man is going to be a stone-cold murderer, vicious and brutal. And the Bible lays emphasis on the fact that he stared at him. It wasn't a staring contest. It's simply perceiving what he was capable of. And you have to have that ability. Jesus had the ability to say, "One of you is going to betray me. I know what you are, what you're capable of." And so that's very necessary. In in some ways, it's helpful to go into ministry being a little bit naive. When I went into ministry, I assumed that everybody would love Jesus like I did. I had no concept that people would do you wrong and whatever. You know, in a way, that's good to a good way to approach that has advantages and whatnot. But this one of the things that you have to develop. You really do have to understand human nature. And not only understand it, this scripture says you have to have the ability to confront it. So he not only, it's not just like looking at a crowd, yeah, I know what you're going to do, yeah, I see it. The Bible says he stares at it and he tells him what he's going to do. So he's confronting him with the truth. And so this would be a fairly awkward conversation, wouldn't it? So, how's work? And you're going to rip apart babies. This would be a little awkward. I would say you stared at him and the guy's like, what? So this is uncomfortable. Telling people the truth is often not comfortable because in my experience, lots of people don't appreciate the truth. Why, Pastor, thank you. Thank you for pointing out my character flaws. I was unaware of that. And so this is a common reaction that we see here is that when you see human nature, you confront human nature, they turn on you. Look at verse 13, 2 Kings 8:13.
So Haziel said, "But what is your servant, a dog, that he should do this gross thing?" And Elisha answered and said, "The Lord has shown me that you will become king over Syria."
Okay, so what is your servant, a dog? You're accusing me of being a dog? In other words, he's offended. That's what's going on here. You don't get this sometimes in the King James. It sounds factual. This would have been emotional. So I say, hey, you know what? You're going to be a brutal, butchering murderer. How dare you? How dare you accuse me of that? And that's what happens with people. You tell them the truth, they don't appreciate it. They try to dispute like there's something wrong with you for thinking about that. So, the disadvantage of confronting Haziel is this. So, you have to have the ability to see the truth. The danger is it's very easy to become cynical. Cynical. Cynicism is, of course, seeing the worst in human nature. And they say that the two highest professions, jobs that make you the most cynical, are policemen and pastors. Because you see the worst of human nature. I hear everything. People come, you know, they're embarrassed to tell me something. It's like, there's nothing you're going to tell me that is going to shock me. I hear the worst of human nature. I deal with the worst of human nature. So, because you have to deal with Haziel's, of course, that's in figuratively speaking, the danger is that you start looking at everybody like they're Haziel. So, you're confronting this guy. Listen, you're what you are on the inside. And then the little old lady comes to you. Yeah, what do you want? You start looking. How are people going to burn me? This is very dangerous. I deal with pastors who they get into this mode that when they come to church, they're looking, they're suspicious. How are you going to burn me? How are you going to slander me? How are you going to rip me off? And that's just not going to work. You can't minister that way. So what happens is we withdraw because we only have the ability to confront and see the worst. So, that is a danger. But you have to be able to do it. Okay, let's talk about helping widows. Here's the second mode of ministry, if you want. So, ministry, fortunately, involves some very nice people. Thank God for this. Yes, I do see the worst. But I'm going to tell you, God has blessed me in my ministry. I pastor fantastic people at the same time. Doesn't mean every person in my ministry is perfect, but So the Shunammite here, to Elisha, had been very helpful to him in ministry, provided financial assistance, even to remodel the house, to make a way and to be comfortable, to treated with respect. Lisa and I just were in Footscray, in the city of Melbourne in Australia. So it's been 20 years since I pastored there. I pastored there twice. So they had a dinner on Sunday night, and so a few people made speeches with memories of our ministry. It's like, man, God has given us some fantastic people. These people believed me when I told them that we were going to reach the world, and I don't know why they believed me, but God helped us in seeing converts, and it's like, thank God, God has given some wonderful people. So, in this story, some people find themselves in hard times and they're going through it. So, you minister to people that are going through difficult situations. Clearly her husband has died now. She's a widow. She's struggling financially. It's as simple as, how am I going to eat? You minister to people that are emotionally struggling. They're under the gun. They're going through it. And maybe it's a doctor's diagnosis and all the things that happen and ill health. Maybe their children are backslidden and they're taking that to personally, like as a personal failure. Some people are spiritually battling. They've been doing wrong. They've gotten off track. They're involved in sin. They're struggling to regain the joy, or they're under assault. And so for these people, when they're struggling, when they're hurting, when they're coming with their problems, you're not confronting them, right? As a pastor, I'm standing on a cliff. I'm about to jump off. I don't even think I can go on. Like, listen, pal. Well, you don't treat them like that, right? You toggle into the kindness mode. There's some of you that you've been going through it, and I have looked you in the eye and said, I promise you, it won't always be like this. Well, you're not always going to feel like, I know, you feel like this is the end. It's not. God is going to help you, I promise. That's in the kindness mode. That's part of ministry. And so you speak kindly, you offer practical advice. What he says to her, a famine's coming, you need to go somewhere where you can find some help. And it's very practical. So that's a part of ministry. Confrontation, kindness. Confrontation, kindness. Seeing the worst, seeing nice people, that's true. Okay, the danger is you can't operate only on the kindness gene. So some people, they don't have the ability to be realistic about human nature. You heard Pastor Mitchell tell a story when he preached on lying recently. Is that he had just before service, him and the assistant pastor at the time had been confronting a man, and the man was denying all involvement and was spinning a tall tale. And so it went so long they weren't able to finish it. Service started, they're sitting on the platform, and as the man walked in to the church, he leaned over to the assistant. Pastor Mitchell said, he's lying. And the assistant was shocked. Why would he lie? And Pastor Mitchell laughed and said, why do people need a reason to lie? And sure enough, it was true that the man lied. So there are people that they are just, we call this naive, operating not on full information. They don't have the ability to see people that are hurting them. It's like this guy in your church, he's going to hurt you. No. So your ministry, your approach in life cannot be all kindness. So what happens, that kind of person gets blindsided. Had one of our young pastors one time, after he'd been a couple years in the ministry, what's the hardest lesson you've had to learn so far? And he said, learning what people are really like. And that's true. That's a difficult part of ministry. You begin to see human nature, that what they're capable of. And so if you are naive, not understanding what people are capable of, then you take it personally. There are people, it's like someone backslides from their church or falls into sin, and they take this like they have personally. It's like, come on, man, were you holding the meth pipe? Did you did you put them in bed together? No. Hey, people sin. It's like, I must have failed them if I had been preaching. You can't live like that. You can't take this personally. Or, my people must be the worst because look at what's going on in the church. So, people who can only be kind struggle as leaders because then they struggle to tell people the truth. They struggle to tell people the truth, and they struggle to limit, restrict, forbid. In any given week, I make numbers of decisions that make people unhappy. It has to be done. If I wanted to be voted the nicest guy, most popular guy, then I shouldn't be a pastor. It's just nature. No, you can't do that. No, if you ever do that again. No, that's just the ability that you have to have. And so if you can't do that, then of course you're not helping the person who's doing wrong, and then you're not protecting the church. I make decisions that are best for the church. So I'm going to protect other people from in various kinds of things. So if those things are true, very simply before we close, then the need is for balance. This is the trick. One of the reasons for a toggle switch in flying is you don't fuel adds weight. So you can't just drain all the weight on one side. It's not going to fly well. It's going to be more difficult if you are imbalanced. In ministry, you can't be an imbalanced man. As I say, this is very common. There are guys there, they're killers. You will. Sit straight. Don't move. Don't breathe. That's all they can do. Then there are other guys there, the warm and fuzzy pastor. Meanwhile, half the church fornicating. Rebels and religious people are stealing all their people. You can't. You got to balance confrontation, kindness, back and forth any given day. So, and then that means from time to time what has to happen is you have to come to God. As a pastor, I'll go through brutal seasons of confrontation, violations, betrayal, and so I can feel myself, it's not healthy when people are coming and they're pouring out their heart and I'm thinking, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's not good. So I have to come to God. I can't minister like that. I have to be able to minister in compassion. So sometimes I have to, as a man of God, come to God and say, God, you have to help me. I don't want to become cynical. Not everyone. What is it? Psalms 116:12 says, I said in my haste, all men are liars. So you get like that. And that's not healthy. God, you have to help me. That's a refreshing. Sometimes that's in conference. Pastors come dragging in, and Monday, Tuesday, by Wednesday, they're ready to go again. God is renewed them, but you have to have the ability to do that in yourself. Okay, let's open for questions then. Toggling in ministry.
Andy. I guess, I know this is an easy question to answer, but ever give people, before the confrontation, you give them kind of the benefit of the doubt that maybe they didn't mean that, what they said, or they didn't mean it in that way, and then ask?
Yeah. Part of any confrontation or reconciliation or any kind of conflict in human nature, you are wiser to assume the best. I even teach you all, if you're going to speak to someone about a difficult situation, you're wise to say, I need you to help me. Maybe I'm misunderstanding this. You know, when you were standing there with a knife, maybe you were, beheading chickens or something. I don't know. Maybe I misunderstood. Help me with this. So that's a better way. And there have been times it's like, oh, okay. I got either wrong information or I misunderstood that. So that's possible. Yes. So that's the first part of the question. Yeah, so that's part of the balance. Giving people the benefit of the doubt doesn't mean I'm naive, like that you would never do that. It just means I'm, you know, maybe there's more to the circumstances or... one of the things is that even if you're dealing with people, I've made a statement to you many, many, many times through the years. Honestly, I've been pastoring 31 years. I have pastored very few evil people. Very few. I've come into contact with very few people that I would say that person is evil. I meet many stupid people, people who get off track, people get into sin, people who become distorted through bitterness, people who made bad decisions, but very few evil. So the reason why that's important is even if I'm dealing with people heatedly, I still can believe that they can change. So there is a difference. You know, I don't know if you understand where I'm coming from, but that is important.
Yep. One thing that I've wondered about is just speaking practically, like how when it comes to how somebody carries themselves and how they speak, how intense they get. I've noticed that there's people that I admire that are pretty successful, that when they have to deal with a confrontation, they switch on an actual intensity. Their voice is not the same. The words they use are not the same. They'll get in someone's face. And I'm wondering, is that required for confrontation?
No, nothing's required. So there are things that there may be some things that are natural in your human nature. For me, normally intensity is people who are being defiant and refusing. So number one is you gotta learn a skill. Human nature, if you are dealing with something that is tense, several things happen. They're physiological. Generally, some people, blood runs to your face, right? And that's physiological. The reason why. There is because when there is emotion involved, your body is getting you ready. Do you need to run? Do you need to fight? This isn't a physical fight, but there is a mental fight. So that's problematic. For many people, their voice changes. Some people, their voice goes up higher when they're angry. So some of those things are you learn to try to physically restrain them. You try to, again, in a skill, how you begin the conversation kind of determines sometimes which direction it goes, right? If you have a problem, if I think that somebody didn't do something and I'm going to ask them about it, probably if I start the conversation with what kind of moron would do something stupid like that, I predict this conversation is not going to go smooth. Right, so that becomes it's a way to begin. Then, of course, in the middle of it, if someone's getting overly heated and emotional, you can try to calm them down. Sometimes that works, but if necessary, people who are being defiant or overly stupid and they're harming in the overall, I have no problem getting intense. I can do that. But often, some people think that intensity is the only way to get something done.
I guess what I'm asking, in my job, for the first time in my life, I've had to actually correct other people.
Mm-hmm.
Not something that I dealt with a lot before my job, but now, we have new guys come on, and I have to tell them they're doing something wrong, and sometimes it's a repeated thing, sometimes they are defiant attitude, and it's not in my nature to be aggressive and in people's face, but I wondered before, man, it's been very effective when people did that to me. Maybe I should learn that. Does that make sense?
Practice in front of the mirror.
I'm probably... do you get what I'm saying? Sometimes I'm not actually angry, but I'm wondering, am I being too nice here? Am I being too much of a pushover? Should I learn more intensity?
Eli, all you need to do if you want to get into the ministry, I predict there'll be some situations it'll bring it out of you. It'll happen naturally. No, the simple issue is that it's in any confrontation, you have to you have to have the ability to explain. It doesn't do any good if you're screaming, yelling, and intense, and yet the person still doesn't understand what you mean, right? So, what was it? Josh Neal, when he was on staff, of course he wasn't saved in our church, and after being on staff, he had a very different reference point. And I asked him, so what have you learned since you've been here? And he marveled about a few things. He said, anytime you kick my butt, he said, if you kick my butt, if you got irritated, he said, number one, I always understood what it was I did wrong. In other words, I clearly explained either what it was that he did, why that's important in the overall picture, how that will affect the future. And then he said the second thing is, even if you were irritated, then minutes later you spoke to me normally. So one of the things is many people, they'll make bad decisions because they don't understand, and it takes repeated efforts to get the same point across. So it may be that you're explaining, if you don't do this, this is what happens to the job. If you don't do this, this is what happens in ministry. If you don't do it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's the, when I forgot to put the ad in the newspaper when I was a disciple, and Pastor Mitchell explained to me, if we're showing an evangelistic movie in the hopes of having sinners, and no sinners know that the movie's going on, how is that? It's like, yeah, that wasn't so smart, right? And so I often explain to concert directors the future. You got to follow directions because this is about your future. Someday I'll be telling you what to do, and it literally will be someone's salvation hanging in the balance. It won't be taking out the trash, printing broken pieces of equipment. It'll be people's lives. So that's why it's very important to me that you listen and follow directions. I always try to explain the big picture. So I don't know if that helps, but you got to work it in. Here.
Do you apply this to the way you preach? As in, do you use different levels of intensity depending on the sermon you're preaching or depending on the message, or do you kind of stay at the same levels each sermon?
Yeah, of course. You can't be, if you're preaching on hell, you're preaching on hell, rebellion, something that is very intense, you would not preach it the same as, the love of God and how God's going to help you. So, I suppose. But you also have to be aware. One of the things that early in ministry, this is the value of a good wife, is my wife pointed out to me, she says, sometimes when you preach, your face makes you look angry and arrogant. You're saying it. And I saw that, finally when I got what she meant, and I saw other people doing it, is that makes me want to poke that guy in the eye. It doesn't make me want to listen to what he says. So I think I had to work on that. How to say things without either coming across as arrogant jerk or, acting like I'm angry about it when it's not necessary. I had inappropriate. So there is that's a skill in preaching. If you ever read Spurgeon has a whole book, Lectures to My Students, and he would do that. He would say, what you're preaching, of course, will depend. You'd tell them. He said, if you are preaching on heaven, your face should reflect the glory of the Lord, right? You should be happy. This is good. He said, if you're preaching on hell, your regular face will do.
Pastor, do you have any more toggling statements? Like the first one you said is, I need you to help me understand this. Is there any more transition statements that you have that you can pull out? If you're dealing with
confrontation, yeah. There are a few, and I don't mind. I say, I need you to help me with something. That's how I introduce a topic. Perhaps I am misunderstanding this. Can you please explain to me what happened here. So those are a few. But I think another lesson, if you remind me, I think I have another lesson. I have some of those. I have a whole lesson just on speaking to people in confrontation or resolution. So if you remind me next week, I'll give those to you. Yeah.
What is that book, or would you suggest a book? Isn't it like verbal judo?
Verbal judo. Yeah, verbal judo is an excellent book. Yeah.
Does it get into that? I haven't read it.
Yeah. So verbal judo. The whole point is trying to defuse a verbal confrontation. That's the whole point that he makes in the book. And you know, I read that book. I made my task harder early in ministry because I didn't understand certain things. Partly that was in my own insecurity, my own pride. I approach people in the wrong way, and I inflamed what could have been a fairly easy conversation. I didn't know how to tamp the conversation down without veering into emotion. A lot of things. So you know, there's different ways to do that.
Yeah, I've been at the wrong end of some leaders, you know. When I've left that situation, I've noticed there are some leaders that are just, you walk away knowing there's hope.
Yeah.
It's going to be okay. I blew it. And then there's others, you feel like a pile of poop, you know what I mean? It's like, I want to go slit my throat. There is a definite talent and an ability, I guess, art to doing that, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
I appreciate those that can redeem you.
Yeah. And so that part, that comes first of all out of how you view people. I do not believe that people are stupid. I do not believe that. I believe people are basically, they do have some wisdom. They want to do right. I don't believe everybody's devils. And so that's why you don't hear me speak. I don't talk to one of you about how everybody else is an idiot, because I don't believe that. I don't approach. So you can come to me and tell me the stupidest thing you've done, and I'm not looking at you like, what kind of moron would do something like that? Because I've done some pretty moronic things myself. So that will determine how you do. And then of course it's your, as I've said often, your theology of God is crucial. I believe in the goodness of God. So I have the ability to know what, I'm not fooled by human nature. Any given time, I know our people are capable of anything. But they can be redeemed, because I believe in the God of redemption. That's important. So the bottom line is, if it's about your ego or is it about helping them?
Right.
If it's about, and I often made things about my ego in early days. This is not necessary. It's not about me. It's about them and how they need help. Right? Vince?
If in the confrontation mode you're dealing with a situation and it turns out that you've been operating under false information, is there a way to transition out of that? Like, say somebody, an example of, you know, somebody accuses another brother of something and you confront them about it, like, so-and-so said this, and they don't know how to respond and say, oh, that's not actually how it is. They just, their response is to explode on them. And then it makes it seem like they are guilty even if they're not. Is there a way to factor that?
Yeah, so first of all, what you have to understand, remember when when I just did the thing on the gifts of the Spirit in the final lesson, so pastoring is supernatural. And so, so first of all, in dealing with accusations, there are ways to, how you are beginning the conversation, that kind of determines it as to whether or not. So again, in a confrontation, if I hear something, I need you to help me with this. Is this true? So no, absolutely not. I was actually in New Mexico at the time. How can I? You know, all right, that's fine. I have people. It's as simple as it's a factual yes or no. and it's easily resolved, then you get into the tricky ones of it's not really clear either way, and that's when God has to help you. So, but of course, then I have people that they give me the, what am I, a dog? And what does he do immediately after that? He goes and murders somebody. So, and so some of the people who are the most wounded and offended that I would even suggest that, they fulfill exactly what I said they would did or were going to do. So that's human nature. That's the way it is.
Are there any times when you just disregard somebody telling you something about somebody else completely?
Yeah, you got to understand, I hear everything. So some things are, it's too little information. I can't act on it. It all depends, right? There are thousands of different situations and permutations. So, no, I don't act on every little thing I hear. There's the consider the source, right? So people who they're envious, they have a vested interest. One of the simple questions when you're dealing with conflicting information is, why would the person say that? What are they getting out of it? So if a person is, for instance, I know that they're filled with jealousy and envy and they're stabbing the person in the back because they're going to get something out of it. Or they have a past history of conflict. They've always hated this person, so they're putting the boot in. So it lends greater credibility when this person has nothing to gain. That's a common sense. That's a common sense issue. So I couldn't possibly tell you every situation. That's why you got to pray for wisdom as God guides you supernaturally. But no, I don't act on every little bit of information. Some of that is okay. I file that away. Then I'm getting now a file, got a mental file. Okay, all right, now come on. Now four people have said the same thing. What's going on here? Okay, now we have a we need to talk about this. Listen, from everything, from new converts to pastors and leaders in my job, I have to deal with everything. I have to investigate. I got to find stuff out. Sometimes it's incredibly complex. So I've had things that I've filed away for years, and said that's impossible to deal with right now. God, when it's right, help me bring it out, and He did.
What would be after you have corrected someone? What would be something that you could say? This person took it correctly, and learned from it.
Well, the main thing is that I explain is that I don't like powders. In my family, when I was raised, so we got corrected. We got spanked with a belt. We were allowed to cry for a short amount of time, and then there came a time when my dad said the famous words, "Suck it in." Or snub it. In other words, enough is enough. And then we were not allowed to bring that to the dinner table. Because we'd come to the dinner table after we got spanked. We'd go, that's a good way to lose an arm right there. But that's a life lesson. So one of the things I explain to people, if you're going to be a disciple, I don't like powders. There's no point in pouting. If I have to deal with someone, it's not personal. Number one, as I said, I don't believe that people are stupid. I don't believe that people are evil. So if I have to get onto somebody, I am training them, especially disciples, I'm training them for the future. It's all about the future. Right? So there may be causing problems at the moment. Let's fix that. But really, my concern is I'm trying to make you a man of God. So it is pointless to pout. I don't need an attitude. I don't need people to avoid me. That's childish. That's girls. I'm wanting to raise men. That's why, as Josh said, he was shocked. I have the ability that I learned from my father. I can be in your face I can be ripping your head off 1 minute, and the next, that was an issue. Once we deal with the issue, it's done. I'm not holding it against you. I don't wake up in the morning and go, that jerk, I can't believe that. Hey, it's done. I dealt with the issue. I explained what the problem was. We fixed the initial. Let's move on. It's not on my radar. I don't want to. So a person accepting it is someone who can say, okay, they can acknowledge, fix the problem, and then move on without avoiding me or without emotional manifestations of pouting. That's a good sign. And then, of course, change. Fix what the original problem was.
As disciples, we're supposed to, if you want to go out and preach, learn things here before you get out there. And how would you learn how to deal with confrontation here?
Because life will fill you with confrontation. So, number one, get involved in ministry. Every person who gets in ministry, you're going to have a conflict with somebody. And that's good. People come to me like, Pastor, I got in the band and we're fighting. It's like, and your point is? And so their answer, I'm going to quit the band. Why? I learned fantastic lessons. You got to understand, Pastor Paul Graham, when he comes here, we were in the band together. There were times we were at each other's throats. We had to work stuff out. So that's fine. I learned lessons this day. So being in ministry, being on the job, and working with brothers and sisters in the church, there will be ample opportunities for offense, irritation, all kinds of things. That's good. That's why discipleship is not sending you away, locking you away in a school for 4 years. What you need is, this guy bugs me, and that guy burned me. What am I going to do with this? It's a skill. Confrontation, resolution is a skill in life. So we don't have the ability. Because you have a problem, the Bible says your brother does you up. This is what you do. You go to him. Pastor, that guy hurt me. Have you talked to them? No. Why? What does the Bible say? You go to your brother. And you learn how to do this with the things that our brother was asking about. I need you to help me. Maybe I misunderstood when you said that I'm a stupid moronic idiot. You got to help me with this. So you work it out. Is there something else? Someone called me yesterday. They're in a confrontation, and I was explaining to them there are things that can't be resolved, and that is, I can fix a fact. I can't fix what's inside someone. So if I discover that what I'm dealing with is not factual, it's a feeling, I can't fix that. Right? And I explained the story being back in Melbourne. It reminded me, I had a guy that, when I took over this church, and it was actually another pastor, and so there was a misunderstanding, and so I called, as the Bible says, I called to resolve this. This should be simple. We had a conflict. Apparently there's a problem. What's going on? And so I'm thinking this is a fact that we can fix. And this guy went off on me, and he's like, you just think you're Greg Mitchell. And I was like, actually, I do. There has never been a morning where I woke up and said, I am a Jones. So he began to rant and rave, and it dawned on me, his problem with me is not a factual. I can't fix it. So I'm not going to spend a lot of time. That's in him. That was his insecurity. That's his own daddy issues. I can't fix that. So therefore, I just maneuvered around him and made sure that I didn't take it personal. I had to learn. So that's another life lesson. But you got to work it out, Eli.
When you do encounter people who pout and draw away and shut down, but people in circumstances where you can't just you have to work with them. There's no other option. How do you respond to somebody who shuts down and won't talk to you after you said something to them?
Well, yeah. There's no magic words. It depends on the person. There's no magic words, but again, I try to draw them into further conversation. Of look, since I talked to you, now you won't look at me. This is not going to work. That's not helpful, right? It's not going to help us to be in the same band if you won't look at me, right? It's not going to help us be in the same church if you're, you know, pouting or we're on the same job. That's not going to work. Explain to me. If we didn't resolve it, do we need to fix something more, or you're just upset with the result? Are you taking this personal, like, you know, if a job has to be done a certain way and someone's not, and you say, look, it has to be done, and then they're upset with you, this isn't a matter of personal worth. And that's often, I have to say to people, listen, because I want you to do this, this is not a vote on your entire worth as a human being. Okay, you're just doing something wrong. I need you to stop that. Or I need you to do this a certain way, and this is why. But this is not, you are a worthless human being, because what people are hearing and what you're saying can be two different things, which often is why there's an emotional reaction, right? And any of you that are married here, you've perhaps said these words to your wife, so you think I'm stupid. And so that your wife may have been talking about the trash, she may have been talking about money, maybe, and so you said those words, you think I'm stupid. That's what you heard. That wasn't what she said. And that's true in dealing with people. Sometimes you're getting an emotional reaction because of their past, right? That's why I deal with people on rejection. I'm trying to help them for life, because I'm saying, look, I need the advertising to be done, the trash to be picked up, microphones to be at the outreach, and what they're hearing is, you are a stupid, worthless moron. That's not what I said. That's what they heard. That's supernatural. So, if I can, I can help them. Going back to the guy in Australia. When he's saying, you just think you're Greg Mitchell, he's hearing things that are deeply rooted in him. I can't. And that'd be, you know, that was something, not something I could fix. And I didn't fix. He's destroyed. Not even saved today, as far as I know. So that's life.
Knowing someone's, if you're a pastor, you know someone's past, you know where they came from, and they have a lot of issues with rejection, but there's something that you need to tell them about. Do you, in that moment, just take a real, you confront them, but they really explain why this is necessary?
Sure.
And take a
exactly.
Gentle approach.
Yes, and that's the difference in people knowing their background. That's why I like to get to know people. It helps me, because it really explains a lot. There are people that even people who are not going to react correctly, et cetera, it helps me if I know where they're coming from. There are people that's like, I probably, if I had your background, I probably would have some strange manifestations too. I mean, that just helps me to relate to them. That's a good thing. So so you definitely, I don't speak to every person the same. Jesus didn't speak to every person the same, right? The Pharisees, you vipers, you snakes. Then the disciples, he spoke differently. And then there's different levels in, I can speak to someone based on where they're at. I can speak to them based on knowing their emotional makeup. The stronger a person is emotionally, the easier it is to work with them, and the faster I can work with them. Right? So, I need this done. Boom, boom, boom. All right, let's go. Someone else who has deep rejection issues, I need you to do this. This is not because you're stupid. This is because, and you know, it just takes longer. I gotta maneuver to help them. And so, yeah, absolutely. So that is why my number one prayer is for wisdom, because it's supernatural. I need help. You can't find Some of this stuff you can read books that'll help you, but it must be a miracle of God. That is ultimately what I do is a miracle. I need a supernatural dimension. It would take a miracle for me to be able to minister to different types of people, to not take things personally, to speak graciously, to confront wisely, all in the same day. You got to imagine my day. I often get people, Pastor, this is a common question I get when I travel. Pastor, can you explain to me your schedule during your work week? And I just laugh, like, okay, from 8 to 12, I am studying and there will be no interruptions. That's just not possible. My day can go. Oh, dear. I can pick up the phone and I hear the sound of the anvil falling with Wile E. Coyote. This one's not going to be good. I go from elation to, what? And you had how many people? That's tremendous. What? They're wearing a dress? No way! That was literally a call yesterday. That is not a joke. You have no idea how many crazy things I hear in the average day. So that's the point. Is in pastoring, it's a roller coaster. You got to do that. Yes, you're doing tremendous. Don't ever do that again. She was doing what? It's just, yeah. That's why I need a miracle dimension of God. That's why you should pray for your pastor. That's why Paul, pray for me. Pray for me. I need help. So, very good. Okay, guys.